Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano. You know, advertisements were invented by the devil to make Ayn Rand happy, and no one wants to make Ayn Rand happy. But audio production is expensive, so to keep commercials off this podcast, I've got all three ebooks in the Happy Bureaucracy series rolled into one for the price of a single book, which honestly is the best way to support this podcast. Just check the description for a link and tell your friends about the crazy shit you have been listening to have less friends. Thanks. And now, for something completely different.
A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note: strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Chapter 12. Nothing happened for longer than Arthur was prepared for. The worst part was the anxiety he had, playing the waiting game. He thought perhaps a rabbit hole would open up beneath him, swallowing him whole, and that he would be auditing hookah-smoking caterpillars in a daze. "Am I going to see something?" Arthur said, fear creeping into his voice. "Sacrificed all of that stuff for those undeserving swine barbecuing below," Rabia replied, retrieving blankets, water, and an ancient six-pack of beer from the van. "Not enough light to set up the tents," she said, laying the blankets on the ground, and then herself. She patted a space next to her, urging Arthur to join. He did so, nervously. "They don't make these anymore," Rabia said, cracking open a beer for herself, and then handing one over to Arthur. "I wasn't going to drink these for a while, but what the hell? We are probably going to die tomorrow anyways." "You don't have to go," Arthur said. "The hell I don't. We get that book and we can end some suffering on a massive scale. That alone is worth the risk. Plus, someone needs to keep your dumbass alive." The drugs hit hard, and neurons in Arthur's brain fired off a 21-gun salute every half minute. The infinite span of stars shone brighter, and the endless void that they resided in became less monstrous and more wondrous. He was at once aware of how cold he was in the night's air, and how vulnerable the earth he lay on was as it hurtled through space. The feeling was good, but it was incredibly lonely. His mind reeled back and forth in waves of ecstasy and helplessness, each one cresting higher than the other, and neither was more crushing than the hope he felt. He had been a caged man today, caged as a slave to be sold, and caged in the routines and rigid structure of the IRS. It had occurred to him that at this moment, for the first time in his life, he was finally free. The underground concrete hallways of the IRS bunker had been structured to keep him moving upwards in a hierarchy, but always at the mercy of it. Freedom was not at the top of this ladder, as he had sorely learned sitting next to DeWitt in the slaver camp. He had said yes to everything that had ever come to him in paper form, while the planet around him whimpered its last breath. How much of his finite time had he traded, counting other people's numbers for a note of currency from a dead era? It wasn't until he was surrounded by a literal cage that it had occurred to him that he was never at the helm of his own life. Sure, a portion of that was mere survival, but that was a charge everyone in the United Wastes had to deal with. And still, there were those who found a way. Euphoria weighed down on his body, and the 21-gun salute firing off neurons in his brain had become a constant, rapid fire of buckshot. It was just him and the lonely, far away, dead stars. He shivered from the cold, even though he was wrapped in a blanket. He was suddenly fully aware of every detail of his tactile senses and found the chill impossible to ignore. Rabia pressed her warm body against his, which took the nip out of his chill and displaced his sense of being utterly alone. Rabia. Somehow free, self-destructive, mad even, but she had retained her humanity. It was hard for him to imagine how he had ever resented her. He wanted to say everything that was on his mind, the infinite universe, his self-built cage, how much he admired her, and how goddamn thankful he was. It was hard to push through the drugs to speak, but he had finally found his voice. And once he'd started, Rabia was straddling him. Once we get talking with this high-powered beast, neither of us is going to want to stop, she said, her warm body pressed against his. We might not make it past tomorrow, so why don't we save the chit-chat and break some office rules? There was no thinking here. There was no need to. Arthur reached up and kissed her. Then, with devilish urgency, they shed clothes. His heart raced. Her skin was soft and warm, her kiss deep and voracious. He could feel her hips pressing greedily on his own. But nothing was happening. Her eyes were still placid with the endorphin rush of the drug, but a tinge of frustrated disappointment was there. She let out a sigh. You're not going to get hard, are you? The question made Arthur bashful, ashamed. He was not able to spit out more than, Don't worry about it, Rabia said, climbing off. That's probably the A in the MDMA. It happens. We'll do the dirty when we are sober. This didn't do much to assure him or calm his feelings of being inadequate. Sensing this, she teased, If we live long enough, but, you know, whatever. She took a long pull of beer and then cuddled into him, resting her head on his chest. I'm sorry, he said, as every ounce of him except his penis was up for the dirty deed. Please be man enough not to make me console your ego right now, Rabia said. Besides, this, she said, cuddling up tighter, is not overrated. He held her naked body tight to his own. She was right. I'm sorry, he said once more. What the hell did I just say, Arthur? Rabia snapped. No, not for that. I'm sorry for today. I'm sorry that we had to go back. I'm sorry for everything. The waves of euphoria he had felt were now coming in as big combers. The joy of tactile touch and the glitter of stars were overwhelming for a moment, but he soon hungered for more. He was powerless in the face of the monolithic paper shoveling at the IRS. It was the last place on the planet where civility remained, where human decency was a luxury not yet snuffed out by the savagery of the United Wastes, but it still robbed a human of their significance, reducing them to something that could be thrown away. He was reduced, his power as an intelligent being marginalized. He was just a number, A24. His mind was easily distracted. Rabbit holes of thoughts could be followed with such ease. He felt Robbie's weight on him, her breath, and her heartbeat. He could feel her wool-like hair on his shoulder. Gravity was suddenly so oppressive. Life was so absurd. His mind was easily distracted. How much time had he spent on this planet? How much time had been wasted? A lot. That was proper, living in the United Wastes and all. He had been here longer than his father. He had become his father, hadn't he? Gone on the same suicidal quest for reasons that only made sense when you were sober. Fuck being sober. Did you say something? Rabia asked. He had. He had said something he felt so powerfully. But what was it? How long ago was that? How long had it been since she asked him if he had said anything? Was that a moment ago? She's so soft. How could she be so soft on the outside, but be so hard on the outside? Wait, was that right? It had to be. She was so much braver, but that was good news, wasn't it? If she was braver, then he was brave. He was brave. Brave or stupid?
probably stupid. He felt sorry. I said I'm sorry about tomorrow, I think. I'm sorry I can't let those people suffer. Don't be. Don't ever feel sorry about that, G-Man. One of us damned souls has to have a conscience. Sometimes I feel like mine burnt out a long time ago. It's good to have you here to remind me that I still care. For some reason, I still care. The drug receded for a moment. Robbie didn't feel so heavy. Gravity suddenly felt trivial. Her words were powerful, like they could be sigils. They had power because they were true. His feet were cold. He wanted to kiss her, to try and see if he could make something happen. But the drug crested and rolled down on top of him again, and the energy needed to move felt impossible. He was content to just pass his hands across her thighs. He felt many scars and wondered if she regretted that they were permanent. She still cared. She had still, somehow, managed to keep a degree of humanity, even though she had murdered two people today. She moved her fingers across his chest greedily, and then sighed deeply. "I wish I didn't get rid of the acid," she said. "It's not nearly as fucking cheesy as this."
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice, available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.